It's a pleasure to talk to John Dean once again. I think the last time you and I crossed paths, you may have been talking about a book, but now I'm seeing you. Is this fair to say a regular contributor to CNN?
I am a regular contributor at CNN,
and it's
heading for Washington.
It's a very important time to hear from you because of your experience and your knowledge and your very unique understanding of the situation we all find ourselves in. So let's start with the obvious this week. The Comey hearings are coming up. I assume you'll be analyzing those?
I will be.
What do you anticipate? It's kind of a ridiculous question on one level, but what are your thoughts about what he can say and what he might say?
Well, first, I think he's going to be a good witness. He's very experienced. He's gone through two confirmations, which is a bit of a baptism for anybody. First as Deputy Attorney General, then as Director of the FBI. In both those jobs, he went to the Hill a lot, so he knows his way around up there. To me, the first clue will be, does he come with a prepared statement? If he does, that means he's carefully thought out and written down and planned what he's going to say. That isn't his norm. He tends to come up to the Hill and just sort of talk off the top and say, okay, now I'm here to answer any of your questions, which is going to be harder in this situation because everything we know has been leaked.
Right.
And it's not the best way to do it. So I don't know what he'll do, whether he'll have a prepared statement or whether he'll have some notes or how he'll do it, but that's our first clue to see how carefully he's thought out what he wants to do.
The association he has with Bob Mueller, who seems to be almost universally loved for the position that he's in, is one of professional relations, and there may be some sort of professional courtesy between the two of them. Do you think there's any presumed restrictions he would have on what he would say so that he could, quote, save the good stuff for Mueller?
Well, I think that there have been a couple reports out that he and Mueller have talked and there are no restrictions on him. That's hard to believe because, one, Mueller is so new into the investigation. I'm not sure he knows all of the sort of the danger points. And neither man, I think, want to somehow prejudice any prosecution or disrupt one. So I think there will be care. And they're both, you know, experienced prosecutors. They know the dangers of taking that information public at the wrong time. So I think it's just inherent that they probably trust each other. They know each other well enough, and they probably trust each other that Mueller thinking that Comey will do the right thing, and Comey, in essence, assuring Mueller that'll be the case. He doesn't want to mess up any further prosecution cases that develop from the investigation.
Talking with John Dean, of course, you do have to take the long view and you have to be a better man, right? Because certainly we're all human, or at least, though I question this about the president, we're all human beings. And Comey is in a position where revenge could be on his mind, the way he was fired, the treatment that he maybe felt he didn't deserve. And if he's got a lot of coal to throw on the fire, he could certainly do it. But he also is in a position, correct me if I'm wrong, to be very strategic or pragmatic about this to maybe help the Mueller case along.
Well, you know, I think from what we know that certainly he didn't go over to the White House and have dinner with the president to set him up.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might have anticipated that. What I'm wondering is if they at all gamed it at the FBI with his top investigators, say, okay, what happens if the president leans on me? What happens if the president does this or that? I don't know if they did that, but it doesn't appear he then tried to entrap Trump in any way, but rather he said he tried to manage the situation, has been the wording used, meaning, as I read that, he's got a rookie president who may do the wrong thing, and he tried to steer him away from it.
Right. That was my take as well. Now, I grew up as a kid in the Watergate era, but there's a human factor.
So did I.
Yes, you did. I'm looking at the picture right now. But there's a human factor to all of this as well, including the fact that you got a bunch of people in the White House who are government employees. They're not six-figure rich folks running around who can afford expensive attorneys. They, I assume, are getting pressure at home. You know, no wives or husbands want their their husbands or wives back at the White House to go to jail over any of this, and lawyers are expensive. You went through this. At what point does it reach that boiling point where you go, I'm off this ship, and I'm going to tell people what I know? The loyalty hasn't been returned by Mr. Trump anyway, and I'm not going down for this.
Well, it's an interesting point. I don't know if they'll set up some sort of defense fund. I know that Bill Clinton talked about that, and to some extent he followed through and helped people who had legal expenses after he got out of the White House. And I don't know if I've not heard any talk of that yet from the Trump White House, because they don't really even acknowledge they've got any problems yet. So it is tough for the staffers. And lawyers are expensive, and people do get worried. They don't want to do the wrong thing. And if they, I think that doesn't happen until witnesses start being called before grand juries, and that's when people start hiring lawyers. So it's a little bit early still, and I don't know that it will happen to that degree. The people who were aware of it came in with the problems, and they've already probably made their plans. I mean, people like Bannon and Miller and Priebus, I suspect, have thought this through, and they're, with the exception maybe of Miller, all able to afford attorneys.
Can you be blinded by where you are? I mean, it doesn't sound like it's a very fun place to work at this point, but can you be blinded by the fact that, look, I'm working in the White House. I'm with the President of the United States. This is the most important thing I can do. Can you not see the forest for the trees about how much trouble is around you and that you may be in at a time like that?
Well, the White House is, to a degree, a bubble. It's isolated. It's kind of set back from the hurly-burly of Washington. It's nice office space, nice piece of real estate, big lawn.
Always mowed.
Yeah, and a tennis court.
Sure.
Got all that. But anyway, you can get lulled. And this White House has had its chaos from the outset. Not all of the jobs are filled. That, to me, is one of the more surprising things, that Trump hasn't staffed it up as necessary. So it's a tough time for this White House. And Trump seems to thrive on this chaos. I gather from some of the reports that there was a lot of chaos in the campaign and in the Trump businesses.
Right.
So this is his norm. He seems to be energized by it.
But it's interesting because I think I heard you say this in an interview maybe a week or so ago. The work of the Nixon White House, even in the throes of Watergate, really until it got real ugly at the end, you were still getting policy work done.
Oh, absolutely. It was a very small part of anybody's work. You know, I'm on a scale of 10, it barely would hit a 1. So it wasn't at all consuming. Later, when Haldeman, Ehrlichman, and yours truly all are thrown out of the place, that's when it becomes all Watergate all the time.
Right.
And I'm told that's when it was pretty miserable.
And that's and the tipping point could reach the you know, if we're going along the same track that it feels like here, we could be headed down that path as well. But what's the biggest misnomer people have about you and those years? Like, if there's one thing you go, nah, it didn't happen that way, what would you say?
Well, that's one, that there was chaos. You got to remember, with Watergate, it ran 928 days.
Yeah, sure.
Long time. And so it goes years. This scandal is very early. I think maybe the greatest misimpression about Watergate is how unorganized and error-filled it was. Rather than hushed tones and conspiratorial meetings, it was more blunder and stupidity.
Right.
And I think we're seeing that again. And I think that's more of a norm when scandals happen. Obviously, Bill Clinton didn't have his thinking cap on when he was meeting with Monica.
Sure.
So, you know, these things are, a lot of them are just pure stupidity, get people in trouble.
You know, and the thing I've always wondered, because, again, it goes back to me being a kid, is polling is different now. Obviously, there was no internet. You know, there was more feel to the game as opposed to
technique. There was no cable during Watergate.
There was no cable, exactly right. But you guys, you completely crushed George McGovern. Was there anybody in those conversations that said, okay, the committee to reelect, maybe we don't need to go to this extent because we're in pretty good shape? Or was the data not that available at that point and you really thought you were in a tight race?
There was good data. What Nixon's kind of a belts and braces kind of politician. And when the reelection committee was being built and the money was being raised, he didn't think McGovern was going to be his opponent. That was his dream opponent, which he helped work to achieve. But he thought it could be Muskie. He thought it could even be Kennedy. So he was prepared for a much bigger battle than he ended up having.
Yeah, and the Kennedy paranoia was a Nixon thing forever.
Yes, that was just built in.
I really appreciate your time. It's always fascinating to talk to you, and I'm going to hesitate to ask you the obvious question of what's your prediction of how this ends. So let me just tell you mine. I can't imagine in this country that you and I love that we could be in this position and find ourselves in a position where the man in charge could literally help end this immediately in one way or another by simply saying, investigate. I want this over. I'm innocent, and if he truly is, take every look you want and clear my name. But I don't see any way this ends with Donald Trump doing a four-year term. I just don't.
Well, it's a tough question. The odds are with him staying in for 4 years. If he loses the House in 2018, he's in deep trouble, not only for reelection but for surviving. But right now, I can't see how the Republicans would be inclined to try to move him out of office. Unless he goes down into single-digit approval, which could happen, I see Republicans staying with him. You know, at 30%, they can live with him.
And Nixon had, what, 25, 30% when he left?
At the worst, at the low point.
Yeah, it's rather amazing. I mean, some people will never see it any differently. For people that want to keep in touch with you, obviously CNN, but regularly writing op-eds for all the major papers still, right?
I do, and I tweet at John W. Dean.
It's always nice to talk to you. Have a safe trip to Washington. I look forward to your analysis.
Thank you.
Take care.